I'm on the road to recovery, step by step. Tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's have our joke now.
Hey, Spencer, alcohol joke teller. All right, I got another one from Take Me to Your Sponsor, Best Jokes and Cartoons from A Grapevine. But it is Thursday, so I must remind you that the bathrooms are right there, so there's no need to take the elevator or the stairs anywhere. Yes. Cool. All right. How long have you been driving without a taillight? Asked the policeman after pulling over a motorist. The driver leaped out of his car, ran to the back, and gave a long, painful groan and put his face in his hands. He seemed so upset that the cop moved to ease up on him a bit. Come on now, the policeman said. You don't have to take it so hard. It isn't that serious. It isn't, cried the motorist. Then you know what happened to my boat trailer and 6 cases of beer?
Thank you. Okay. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Rachel. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our 2-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might well distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? If so, let's start the meditation.
Please say
Okay, now we're going to go into the fog light prayer. Excuse me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Brian to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
I'm Brian, I'm an alcoholic. Right. Right. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening are used many times in the book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spiritual upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nonetheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed by once a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educated variety. Because they develop slowly over a period of time, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the differences long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one needs have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all argument, that which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane mode or just turn them off. Okay, so tonight we have Marion. She did a wonderful job last week. Can't wait to hear her tonight. Let's welcome Marion.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mary, and I'm alcoholic. Recovered alcoholic, thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and a loving God. Wow. I have some things on my heart that I want to share with you tonight. It might be a little messy, but we'll see where it goes. It's always messy with me. Watch out. Buckle in. This is what my husband does. Like when I share, because we share, we're shoulder to shoulder, you know, inventory, life. We walk this thing together. And he has this thing he does. I'm going to do it for y'all. It's like, honey, I got something I want to share with you. And he goes, hold on. And he acts like he's putting on his seatbelt and his helmet. Okay, now I'm ready. And, you know, that's live. That's life. That's what we do, you know. This is a continuous job that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We've overcome this hopeless state of mind and body, which we talked about last week, and steps 1, 2, and 3, and that firm foundation for life. You know, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life was unmanageable. I came to believe in this power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. And then I'm ready to turn my will and my life over to that care of God as I understand him. And, I was thinking about this home group, and I just want to do this right now. Just really, really, really thank the home group members that work here and set up such beautiful work here. The chairs, I know what the teardown's like. I know what the setup's like. I know about this beautiful presentation of Alcoholics Anonymous that happens on Thursdays and that happens on Mondays. And I just wanted you to know this from the bottom of my heart. It does not go unrecognized. It does not go unrecognized on my behalf, you know, or any of us, I hope. And if you're here and I'm just a little pitchy pitch for Alcoholics and God, you know, if you're here for the first time or if you're visiting and you want to be a part of this group, you're more than welcome to be here. So thank you for always keeping the light on. The door's open for all of us. And it means the world to us. It really, really does. Thank you. I've had this on my heart all week long of, really, I'm kind of tasked to do 4 and 5, but I'm also, I just feel so sincerely and from the bottom of my heart to talk about one word. In particular, it's always going to be God, but I shouldn't say one word. But I want to talk about forgiveness tonight. Forgiveness for ourselves, forgiveness for others, forgiveness that we get to do in step 4 and 5. And, you know, the meat and potatoes of step 4, you know, resentment's our number one offender. From it, you know, it's our number one offender. And it never fails to happen. I don't know why in particular here at Alcoholics and God it happens through me and in me, but this went live right before I came here. You know, where am I in forgiveness? Where am I in all of that stuff? You know, that if resentment is my number one offender, and what it does is it blocks off the sunlight of the Spirit. And when I'm blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit, you guys, you know, if you've walked this walk for a while, and you've, you know, been jammed up, like we talk about, been jammed up with this resentment or that resentment or things of the past or things of the future or things of the present. I cannot, and I'm speaking for myself and I don't know about you, I can't afford that in my life. And because of this relationship that I have with God, it's so vital. Hey, listen, I'm 34 years sober. November 11th, 1989 is my sobriety date. Okay, so I've been walking this out a while. But that doesn't mean that a drink can't be in my future. If I start thinking, oh, I just have to do some inventory on forgiveness, or, oh, I just have to do some inventory on fear, or, oh, I just need to do a sex inventory, or I need to do all these things. Behind our book says that this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's like the boy that's whistling in the dark that is always going to want to trample on us and get us, you know? And we talked about this last week. What is a form of a drink that can happen? It's sex sprees, food sprees, money sprees, fear sprees, you know, ego sprees, pride sprees. I'm all that in a bag of chips, or I'm not anything at all. You know, all these forms of our disease that show up. And what I care to do today is to be a woman of grace and dignity. What I care about being today is a woman who walks this walk. I mean, I got a phone call earlier that was disturbing, and it was, and it hit hard. And the reality is, it has to do with past resentment. It has to do with past fears. It has to do with some things that I've walked out in my life, and how immediately the prayer turned to share immediately. Immediately the prayer turned to God, save me from being angry. Immediately the prayer turned to God, I'm going to trust you. Anytime I'm in fear, and we can look at fear inventory that way. Anytime I'm in fears, I'm not relying and I'm not trusting God. I talked about that last week a little bit, that in that book, The Power Now, or Purpose-Driven Life, and it talks about the greatest desire of God's heart. The greatest desire of God's heart to honor him and to love him is to trust him. To trust him with the outcome. And for me, what this happened to come is through my children. My husband is my husband on this earth, on planet earth. I adore him. I love him. He's precious and wonderful, and he's my husband. But next to that comes my children and my grandchildren. And when somebody hurts, or there's a threat of hurt, or there's anything like that, man, Mama Bear comes out. I want to protect. I want to, you know, I want to retaliate. I want to, you know, and that's a road I can't go down. I can't afford to go down. And I'm sorry. Well, I'm not sorry to be. If God has assigned this date and this hour and this moment to share with you, I'm going to believe that absolutely everything I have to say tonight is ordained for. It's got to help somebody in the room. If not, I mean, I don't know. But what does that look like going live? What does that look like in my, every time I come here, it's like I go live with whatever step I'm on. It's like, watch out next week for 6 and 7, because I'll probably come with 47 character defects that I've got to process in front of you all. I don't know. But this has been part of the lifeblood of my recovery. Is to walk in forgiveness. Many of us have had, when we step into that first inventory that we've ever done, there's been things that, I mean, I've heard enough fifth steps in my time, hundreds probably, I don't even know. And there's enough wrongs that have been done to us out there. That we could write some, you know, really, if reality TV could walk inside of an AA meeting or a fifth step, holy crap. You know, we've been through some stuff. We have hurts, wrongs, fears, you know, all these things. And what I have to say to you today is, man, how beautiful it is. We're clean and sober, and we're here, and our heads are held high, and we walk out these things. We walk out these things. I'm going to take a little drink here. Water. So my first time through this work, I had done the first 3 steps in a treatment center, and we'll see where this goes from here. I had written my harms, and I had written my fears, and I had written my resentments, and the way we did it back in the day, back in Bellingham, Washington, over 34 years ago, was this: the first 2 columns on the first page folded in half, and the second 2 columns on the other side. And I can tell you, when I got started on that resentment list, you know, I had some wrongs done to me in my life, some wrongs. And man, I couldn't wait to start writing those names. It's like, ha, you know, scratching it on the paper, you know, when you're just writing the list and it just feels so good. And who they were and what they did and who they were and what they did and who they were and what they did. You know, on and on and on and on and on. And then when it came time to turn to the other side of the page, where are those areas of myself that I'm hurt? See, my friend Katie talks about, it's like we're us, and this is live for us today too. You know, when something hurts us, it hurts us for a reason. Because she says we walk around in this bubble suit that people just poke at. Oh, there goes my pride. Oh, there goes my security. Oh, there goes my personal relations. Oh, there goes, I could name every single one of those of what just happened a little while ago. I could, right? Because that's, and we have these reactions, extreme reactions to these things. They're not everybody, you know, other normal people are out there. They have fears. Does your mom have fears? Does your brother have fears? Do they have fears? Yeah, they have fears. Do they have some pride stuff? Probably. Do they have security stuff and they get scared? Do they have that stuff? Yeah, but we have this stuff at extreme levels. You know, we just have these things at extreme levels, right? So when I go through that work the first time and I write the first column and of the people that I resent, of the institutions, of my fear inventory and all those things. But at first when it's the resentments and I'm able to turn that page and I'm able to look at these areas of my life that are affected, you know, the spiritual movement of that pen to the paper, and even with inventories today, you know, it's like there's nothing like writing that out. I have no idea why that's so powerful. I have no idea. I don't. Whether it's a text message, okay, we do that. Me and my sponsees do that. We share our inventories like that. We do. You know, but there's nothing like handwriting, and there is nothing like sharing it with a person. Nothing. And so I write out that stuff. And here's the deal. Back in the day, they used to call it the turn. The turn. Okay? My first column is a resentment. My second column is what happened. And third column is all these areas of my life, the seven areas of self that I'm affected. And the fourth column is where am I at fault? Okay? Setting aside the action of others. Where am I at fault? Where am I dishonest? Where am I self-seeking? Where am I afraid? You know, where is this for me? And I can honestly tell you the freedom that came for that first time writing that was incredible. It was incredible, the freedom that came from that, because it's still that way today. Some stuff happened in my hometown with some family, it's messy, and it ain't mine. It isn't mine. Because the reality is, when we go back and we look at our life, and I know that's not 4 and 5, but that's live of what's going on, right? What's it affecting in me, and where am I being dishonest, and where is it selfish, and where is it self-seeking, and what's the last one I'm not thinking of? Frightened, you know, where am I afraid? I got some, you know what I'm saying? But that's where the freedom comes. No matter what the harm is, no matter what the resentment is, no matter what the fear is, if I am not looking at my side of the street, guys, I will never get free. I will never get free. And how free do I want to be? And how free do I need to be? Because that power called God that keeps me sober, that power called God seeing me in my living room and how the reaction was, and that just getting right to God as quick as possible. Getting right to God as quick as possible and that stuff. Watch me and see me. Do I walk this out where I go? Am I the woman behind this podium that I am at home? Am I the woman behind this podium that I am with my sponsees? Honest, thorough, kind of crazy. You know, whatever. Am I that? Yes. Because I like the effect produced by God. By God. The effect produced by Marion, I might be 5'2" and not a lot, but man, when Mama Bear comes out, you know, the swords are out and I want to fire and I'm telling you, it's like, ain't a grand the wind stop blowing. We come out of the tunnel or we come out of the tornado. And gosh, you guys, I don't want to make amends to somebody that I really don't want to make amends to. I don't want to do that. I'm telling you, God, our book talks about restraint of pen and tongue. Restraint of pen and tongue. Oh, my sponsor says restraint of pen and thumb. You know, whew, we need that today, people, right? Have you ever sent the text and you like, oh, God, no, I need that back. No, I need that back. Yes, right? The pause when agitated or doubtful. The pause. Holy crap, the power of the pause, man. My friend Barry says, pause, P-A-W-S. She's a dog freak and she calls P-A-W-S. She calls it pray and wait, sweetie. Our beautiful Mike Chase. He has this thing we do when we get really mad. I can't do that on camera, but it has a little jump to it and has a certain four-letter word you say. I'll put it that way. So back to the first time through the work, back to the first time getting ready for that fifth step. You know, I came close to drinking. I was walking around, I'm riding around in my 1972 gold Super Beetle, and I had my inventory underneath that car seat, and I'm writing, and I was told to write like you, as if you were going to die. You know, like if you were going to, you weren't anything, that you were taken to your grave. And I wrote it, and I wrote it, and I wrote it. And in that time, my sponsor had brain cancer, and my sponsor ended up passing away. And I ended up at a wedding. And I'm at this wedding, and I hadn't been going to meetings, and I'm sitting on this four-step, and my sponsor just died. And, you know, I ended up being in that place at that wedding reception with a drink in my hand. It's probably the hardest work we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, amends are hard too. It's all hard. I mean, it's all great. But when it comes down to the fact that I'm sitting at this wedding, I have all this inventory. I haven't shared it with anybody. It's under the car seat. And I'm sitting at a wedding and a glass of champagne is in my hand. I'm a year and a half sober. That was my first four step, a year and a half sober. And it's in, okay, if that doesn't scare the daylights out of you in your life, that the strange mental blank spot happens, the drink is in my hand. And I will never forget that as long as I live. Our book talks about we recoil from it like a hot flame. And that drink went on the table and I ran out the door. And I was gone. Down at Dry Dock, hanging out with my peeps down there and making the plan of who was going to hear that fifth step. And the first person, and I say this, and you guys have heard it at Alcoholics and God, but there's people who are new here. And the reality is my first fifth step, but my sponsor had died. I was going through, our book describes all the people that we can go to a closed mouth friend, a relative, never was going to go to a relative, you know, all these people we can go to. And there was this gentleman named Pastor Ron. And I told you last week that my son had passed away and my mom had passed away. And this man was a gentle, gentle giant of a spiritual leader in my life. And my little brother, I'm like, my brother was in the program, my little sister's in the program, and my little brother that lived under the bridge that put all the weird forms of alcohol in his arm, he says to me, why don't you just do it with Pastor Ron? And I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. This is my first time through. I'm going to do this. I had an appointment with him in the morning. It was 9 o'clock in the morning. The appointment's set up, and I'm going to do it. Well, back in the day in Alcoholics Anonymous, we didn't have cell phones to put people's program, their number in it. It's 1990, okay? And so you'd always go to the diner. So we had matchbooks with phone numbers on them and meeting schedules with phone numbers on them. And I had this pile on my dresser of all these people's numbers. And the morning I'm supposed to see, this man was somebody who walked me through the death of my son. This was a man that walked me through the death of my mom. He was a hero. He was a hero to my children. He was a hero to me. And all of a sudden, now I'm going to share my dark, ugly past with this man. Every dark cranny of the past our book talks about. And I'm going to share it with him. No way. So I started dialing all those numbers. And like every good AA we ever hear, right? Nobody answered the phone. And he came to my house and he knocked on the door and I was petrified. And we sat there and we poured through that work. And this wasn't just a pastor, just so you know, that was a man of the cloth that just came to hear a fifth step at my house. He had been going to, there was a treatment center in Whatcom County that was a former home of Randy Bachman from BTO. And he would go out there and he would listen to fifth steps. And he was just a wonderful soul, kind of like Pastor Nick here. He had those eyes, you know. And I sat there and I poured through those pages and I'll never forget it as long as I live because, you know, Joe and Charlie talk about this, that we don't know where those significant spiritual moments happen in our lives where we know we just got it. You know, it can happen in one, it can happen in two, it can happen in three. We don't know where that's going to happen. For me, that first time in my fifth step was that time. So I'm pouring through those pages and I'm reading him my inventory and it's just tear soaked. I'm just sobbing through it because I'm humiliated that I'm telling this person who is a man of God the most rotten, horrible, terrible things in my life. And when I was finished with the inventory, I will never forget the words he said to me. I looked up from the pages and said I was done. And I looked him in the eye and he said, are you afraid I wasn't going to love you anymore? And I was like, yeah. And he said, I love you more now. I went to this diner afterwards with this woman who was my temporary sponsor. And I don't know if you guys are like me, but the physical separation of who I was, truly the significance of who I was as an alcoholic and who I was to become to be, has never left me. And it says this. These are the promises, step five. I want to read that. And I'm going to go in back into forgiveness, so don't worry. Might you have to worry about it anyway. So we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. And that's where I always stop with my sponsees and start where they go for their quiet hour after the inventory. And this is what it sounds like, our fifth step promises. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. I don't know about you guys, but I looked at my shoes a long, 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 long time. And this is where we can get back to. Round 1 through 4 and 5, round 2 through 4 and 5, 5 and 6, all that stuff. I don't know, even to, I share an inventory with Mike Chase or my sponsor today or anything like that. It's petrifying. You still think that you, oh my God, I can't do this, you know? And, but I can look the world in the eye for the first time in my life in that diner with Karen. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. That has never left me. A lot of times my husband, when if he travels alone in Alcoholics Anonymous and he goes off and, you know, for a week, and we usually travel every time together. But man, be alone at perfect peace and ease. I'm like, he'll call and he's like, what are you doing? I'm out on my adventures. I'll just be in the car going to a garage sale or, you know, whatever it is. I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. How beautiful. Our fears fall from us. You know, this thing that happened, our fears fall from us. This thing that happened, immediately I go into fear, like, what could happen? Oh, could they get their feelings hurt? Oh, they could get this. They could get, you know, and it, but immediately, because I walk this out and because I do this work, it can, our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. The nearness. Listen, I'm telling you, if you've ever had a chance to do it with, I mean, a man of the cloth who knows this work, who knows this stuff, nearness of our Creator. There isn't anything that my God does not know about me. There's nothing that you've done. You know, the big book says there's nothing, no power that can separate me from the love of God. No height, no depth, nothing can separate me from that love of God. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. I was walking on air that day. I was walking on air. I'm the mother of these kids. I'm 31 years old, and I'm going to get to be a mom now, and I'm going to get to show up, and I'm not that person that I was. I'm not her. That her... You know, my sponsor later on said, well, what would you do if you met someone just like her? Well, you're gonna. And you're gonna meet lots of them. You're gonna eat lots of them. There's a few of them in this room. And I can tell you they're women of grace and dignity. And I can tell you that they sponsor other women. And I can tell you that they answer the phone when somebody calls. And I can tell you that every single one of those women, and ones I don't know yet, I bet you are too. You know what? That's all God wants from me. See, if I don't get healed, how can I can't transmit something I haven't got. I can't give to Amanda and I, or Stephanie or Susan or Christiana or anybody. I can't give them something I haven't got. But that's where I have to turn in. That's where I have to turn in and look at those places, the shadow side of my soul. I think that's a Richard Rohr thing. The shadow side of my soul, those reasons that I reacted the way I reacted and I did the things that I did. all driven by the disease of alcoholism, all driven by the drink being this far away from me. This far away, and it probably wasn't like this. You know, it was probably more like this. What comes between that is in my hand. I need that power. I need that power working in my life every day, every single day. So now I'm going to fast forward a couple minutes, and I'm going to talk about another inventory I ended up doing about 15 years sober, and it came to a place of forgiveness where it was, I had been in a very tumultuous, even saying it the right way, marriage, and it was very difficult. And a year after getting out and leaving and all this stuff, I go to my AA meeting, because what happened was there's a paragraph on 67 in the 12 and 12, and it talks about justifiable anger, and I had some justifiable anger, and I had things that fueled that, the people at work, the people at AA. Like, if you're on Team Marion, Team Resentment Marion, Team Resentment Marion, because I was wronged. I was wronged terribly. And man, that fueled me for the longest, for a year. And I remember going into that resentment, and I remember going into this meeting, and I had this old man named Jack Wright, and he was an insurance salesman, and I sat next to him on our church bench at the Northwest Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't sit down. I fell on that bench. And when I fell on that bench, I said to him, if I don't forgive him, I am going to die. It says in our book that resentment, they have a power to kill us. Ouch. Somehow those God muscles are deep enough inside of me. Somehow God has given me some kind of, I'm okay with Marion. I don't want that for my life today. And so what that put me into was these prayers. And one of the things that helped me a lot, and Mike does it in his fifth steps, is, these are my prayers that I use. Okay. So the bottom of 66 and 67 is our sick man's prayer. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And I needed to change the narrative, not from abusive bad man, but to spiritually sick. By the way, this is the ex-husband from 20 years ago. This isn't my darling Peter Marinelli sitting here right now. Okay? Just let's make that clear. Okay? This was our course. We realized the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we do not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Oh my God, I had to swallow a pill that said, I'm sick too. We see where they're perhaps spiritually sick. Oh, sick. That's kind of takes the out of it. Okay, sick. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. I don't know how cheerful I was. When a person offended, I wasn't at all. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. And my sponsor at the time said, you do not have to help. This is not your job. Forgiveness. Everyone sitting in this room who's ever had a resentment, and you can turn it to, they are a sick man. Forgiveness is for you. If something on the other side happens, but it doesn't matter. Forgiveness is for me. So avoid retaliation argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. It's like going into a hospital and expect somebody in ICU to get up and go run a marathon with you. Okay? They're not capable. Okay? If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people. Love that line. Love that line. We can't be helpful to all people. Yay! I will love that line so much. But at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Okay, so that's one prayer. Then there was a prayer on page 552 that I go to every single time. And I'm going there again because I love it so much. And this is in Freedom from Bondage. It's page 552. He said, in effect, if you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you pray for the person or want for the person or the thing that you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, oh God, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them and your prayers are only words and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks and you will find you come to mean it and to want it for them, and you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness, resentment, and hatred, you now feel compassionate understanding and love. And I can tell you that that prayer is going to go get some miles on it again, and it's going to be okay. And the inventory will be, and it'll be fine. It'll be fine because I want to be free. And so I have this other thing I read a while back, and this just hit my heart so much because that person, I've already forgiven that person. I have forgiven that person. When I practiced that prayer, it said, do it for 2 weeks. It went 3 weeks. First, I had to pray for the willingness to pray. And then the willingness to pray came. And then I prayed. And then one day I'm driving down the road, however many weeks later, and all of a sudden it was gone. I was in a place of neutrality, safe and protected, wishing, you know, whatever blessings that person has in their life, they have in their life. And I believe that with my whole heart. It just stings a little bit right now. But this is going to explain that a little bit. And I just love it. This is a Emmett Fox thing. So cast thy burden upon the Lord and he shall sustain thee. I love this. So the technique of forgiveness is, I don't know if it's AA approved, but I'm reading it anyway, whatever. So the technique of forgiveness is not very difficult when you understand how. The only thing that is essential is willingness to forgive. Provided you desire to forgive the offender, the greatest part of the work is already done. The method for forgiveness is this. And he just gives a little method. Hopefully, if this works for you, great, but I love it. Get by yourself and become quiet. Repeat any prayer that appeals to you or read a chapter of any book. Saying, I loose this person and let him go. I cast the burden aside. That person's free and I'm free too. The truth of God has set us both free. I thank you, God. Now, this is the part that I love. Well, I love it all, but on no account repeat this act of forgiveness, because to do it a second time would be tactically to repudiate your own work. Afterward, whenever the memory of the offender or the offense happens to come into your mind, bless the bless the person briefly and dismiss the thought. Do this however many times the thought comes back. Have you ever had this? I love this because the power of forgiveness, I believe, can only come from God. I can make the choice to, and I can say I do, I can. But I believe that the power of, I don't have to, oh, I feel forgiveness. I don't think it happens that way. Oh, I've forgiven them and it's all roses and butterflies. No, I made the choice. I forgave. I did it. I did it. So this is what it says. So do this however many times the thought may come back. You will find that all bitterness and resentment have disappeared. And I need to hear this right now. It's good, right? Bitterness and resentment have disappeared, and you're both free with the perfect freedom of the children of God. Your forgiveness is complete. So that's what I have to say about that stuff. But that freedom that comes from step five, guys, if it's, we're as sick as the secrets we keep. And I'm telling you, I used to go to this treatment center, Visions in Bellingham, and I would listen to Fifth Steps every Sunday night. And sometimes I would almost fall asleep. You know, it was like, it's not that bad. But just the things that can block us from this power called God can block us from it, because that's what it is. It's about my conscious separation from you, that I'm not good enough. Oh, my God, if they really know who I am. And you kind of do tonight. So I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be sober. Bye, guys.
Okay. Secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Brandon, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary.
I'm Brandon.
In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. We also have QR codes on the back of the chairs and on Zoom. I've asked Tyler to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in AA identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Thank you.
AA or AI. Tyler, alcoholic. Here's a recovery statement. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now saying where alcohol is concerned, consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship from the forward of the second edition. Alcoholics Anonymous of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried. 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, came to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Is anyone needing a sponsor? Okay, we're all recovered. Awesome. Can the recovered alcoholics raise your hand? Beautiful. A lot of them. All right. If your hand was not raised, we suggest you hang out with those whom were. And then announcements. Intergroup is where you can buy AA-related literature and medallions. Intergroup is responsible for creating our Where and When and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. And then we have Broward County Institutions Committee. It's responsible for bringing meetings into places where people like us can't get to an outside meeting, such as jails, detoxes, and rehabs. They meet monthly to organize the meeting schedules at the 12-step house. Do we have any members of BCIC here? Could you stand up so people can ask you questions after the meeting? Awesome. Thank you. And then here are some AA upcoming events. General Service District 9 needs your help to prepare for the Founders Day picnic. Two planning meetings will be held May 18th and June 1st at the 101 Club. Next. And then we have new co-facilitators, Peter M., JB, and Mike Chase, on our Monday night Big Book Study where the book comes alive. Next. And then we have Marion for another four weeks. And then, of course, we have our home groups, Monday night Big Book Study Workshop, where the Big Book comes alive. Join us for fellowship at 6:30, and the workshop starts at 7:15. And then we have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and the Big Book Dictionaries for sale. We meet here every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells.
Okay, we have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasted at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book Study. And those of you who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.
Thirsty bodies aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah. The only thing that I can do. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. 'Cause they won't profit me anything. Strong.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope.
Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? Thank you. shine a light on me tonight. Lord, shine a light on me tonight. There's no place for a woman like me. My hands are dirty, but my soul is clean. So Lord, shine a light on me. Hands right down to the bone. Work these hands right down to the bone. I've worked so hard for someone I don't know. Watch these walls be bought and sold. So low. Got one man that just won't say.